Nearly 30 years after Congress passed the largest reform in the Defense Department's history via the Goldwater-Nichols Act, the Senate is reopening the topic of Pentagon organization. As Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu reports, senators are hoping to build on the successes of Goldwater-Nichols and repair some of its unintended consequences.
On the whole, Senator John McCain, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, says the 1986 legislation did exactly what it was supposed to, including by breaking down parochial barriers between the military services and building more jointness into DOD. But he opened a new round of hearings on defense reform on Tuesday by saying warfighting and technology have changed a lot since then, as have the Pentagon's bureaucratic problems.
Our defense spending in constant dollars is nearly the same as it was 30 years ago. But today, we are getting 35% fewer combat brigades, 53% fewer ships, and 63% fewer combat air squadrons. More and more of our people and money are in overhead functions, not operating forces. The acquisition system takes too long, costs too much, and produces too little. And all too often, we see instances where our senior leaders feel compelled to work around the system, not through it, in order to be successful.
The committee heard from several experts on defense organization, including two former staffers who shepherded the original bill through the Senate Armed Services Committee back in the 1980s. All of them counseled that another round of reforms is overdue and that changes on the order McCain would like to see will take a multi-year process of study and legislation. But John Hamry, a former deputy defense secretary who's now the president and CEO of the Center for Strategic and International Studies, says Goldwater-Nichols also contained what he calls birth defects that could be fixed relatively quickly. Congress already fixed one of them, he says, by restoring some acquisition authority to the military's uniformed service chiefs. Hamry says another outstanding issue is that Goldwater-Nichols required military officers to serve in joint duty assignments before becoming eligible to be generals or admirals. It's a good idea on its own, he says, but not without reforming the earlier Defense Officer Personnel Management Act. That law set rigid timelines and the career progression for all officers, and those two laws were never quite reconciled.
The personnelists have kind of engineered pathways through this complexity, and it has created an excessively large headquarters structure. They need that headquarters structure to get joint duty billets for everybody. There just are not enough jobs without it. So, unfortunately, we've cut our forces, in my view, too deeply, but we haven't cut the officer corps very deeply, and now we've got too many headquarters. It's pure and simple. So we got to figure out, we got to go back and look at that interplay of DAPMA and joint duty and find out how do we take pressure out of the system so we're not feeding big headquarters structures that are really doing too much micromanagement.
Another key provision of Goldwater-Nichols removed operational control of military forces from the service chiefs and gave it to DOD's large standing combatant commands around the globe, who now report directly to the Secretary of Defense. Hamry says that idea appears to have outlived its usefulness, since nowadays most military operations are now commanded by joint or multinational task forces.
We organize a task force purpose-built for that activity, and frankly, the regional combatant commands are supporting elements now to this activity. They're not really fighting that war. It's the commander of that task force that's fighting the war. But if you go out and you look at the unified combatant commands, they all have pretty beefy structures built around warfighting. They've got a J-1, a J-2, a J-3, a J-4. I mean, and they're not really doing operational warfighting. They're supporting warfighters. I still think we need those unified commands very much because they do strategic engagement with our partners. The next 30 years, our central grand strategy is to get stronger partnerships with friends around the world that share our values and interests. Those combatant command offices, that's what they do. That's their great contribution to us. But you don't need a logistician. I mean, what does he do every day? He calls the guy who's really doing logistics, figure out what he's doing. You know, or a J-6, or a J-2. You know, what we need to do is we really need to redefine those commands so that they are streamlined and they're doing the strategic role that we need to have them done on behalf of the department.
Jim Thomas, the Vice President and Director of Studies at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments, agreed the combatant commands are more bloated than warranted by their current missions, but he added that the boost that they got from the Goldwater-Nichols Act was part of a broader problem with that legislation. Outside of a geographic or functional area, no one in DOD has the authority to make a decision outside of the Secretary of Defense, not even the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Decisions often cannot take place until everyone has occurred, and this frequently results in lowest common denominator outcomes that everyone can live with. The legislation altered the Pentagon's internal balance of power between the Secretary, the Chairman, the service chiefs, and it did so in ways that would leave all of the main actors just short of being able to decide anything alone, thus driving the need for excessive coordination and concurrence between them. By taking the chairman out of the chain of command, it fell short of creating an effective central control entity. In our current system, combatant commands and service chiefs do not work for the chairman, but for the Secretary of Defense and the service secretaries, respectively. Thus, the chairman has to rely on his convening powers and ability to control, cajole and persuade to get things done because he lacks directing authority. No military leader in our current system is empowered to prioritize efforts across regions and produce something analogous to the very simple but highly effective strategy General George Marshall articulated for dealing with Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan upon U.S. entry into World War II. Win in Europe. Hold in the Pacific.
At lower levels in the department, experts also identified pervasive problems with DOD's inability to share information and coordinate amongst its various functional areas. Jim Locker, who served as the staff director of the Senate Armed Services Committee in the run-up to Goldwater-Nichols' passage, says the department is awash in highly dedicated, top-notch experts in everything from intelligence to materiel science to logistics, but that they rarely veer from the rigid lanes in the Pentagon's organizational structure.
What we really need to move quickly is to be able to focus on missions. Missions such as counterterrorism or countering weapons of mass destruction or some of our activities in the Middle East. There is no place in the headquarters of the Department of Defense where the secretary and the deputy secretary could go and have all of that functional expertise integrated into what I would call a mission team. In the business world, beginning in the mid to late 1980s, businesses went to what they called cross-functional teams, where they could get all of the expertise of a corporation together on one team to solve a problem quickly. We need to be able to do that in the Department of Defense. When Toyota started the cross-functional teams, they ended up being able to design an automobile with 30% of the effort. The Department of Defense could do the same thing. You've heard both Dr. Hamry and Mr. Thomas talk about the slow, ponderous process in the Pentagon. In part, that's because we are dominated by those functional structures. The boundaries between them are very rigid.
And just as contemporary organizational theory has changed over the last 30 years, so have the weapons of modern warfare, experts noted. Cyber, in particular, is an area that the current Pentagon organizational structure is ill-suited to address, says Hamry, who thinks that any upcoming update to Goldwater-Nichols should take the acquisition of most IT systems out of the hands of the military services and centralize it within a joint DOD organization.
We're very fractured as a Defense Department when it comes to command and control. The services buy the systems, they operate in a regional command theater. When we've got a centralized cyber command, you know, we're hopeful we're going to have that here. So we're very fractured. And I think it comes down to a fundamental issue. That is that the services still buy their own command and control. And while I think they should be the ones that buy military hardware, I personally am of the view that we now have to buy command and control equipment on a centralized basis. It's the only way we'll get interoperability. It's the only way we're going to get our arms around cyber vulnerability in the department. Very complicated problem, but I think it's almost inevitable we'll have to do something like that.
Besides criticizing the decline in DOD's dollar-for-dollar purchasing power, McCain did not offer any indication of what direction his committee is likely to head in its new quest for DOD organizational reform, other than to offer assurances that it will act judiciously.
We will neither jump to conclusions nor tilt at the symptoms of problems. We will follow Einstein's advice on how to approach hard tasks, spend 95% of the time defining the problem and 5% on solutions. We will look deeply for the incentives and root causes that drive behavior, and we will always, always be guided by that all-important principle, first, do no harm. Defense reform is not a partisan issue, and we will keep it that way. We must seek to build a consensus about how to improve the organization and operation of the Department of Defense in ways that can and will be advanced by whomever wins next year's elections. That is in keeping with the best traditions of this committee. That's how Goldwater Nichols came about 3 decades ago, and that is how Senator Reid and I and all of us here will approach the challenge of defense reform today.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.